police photographing our license plate.
What are we doing for veterans returning home damaged physically and mentally, suffering from depression, homelessness, and suicide?
Why did the Supreme Court deposit corporate money into our electoral process?
Should we redefine middle class as working poor? Or is it just another Wall Street merger?
What's really behind new voter picture ID laws in certain states?
Why aren't NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox asking these questions?
Welcome to The Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio. I'm Marcello Rolando. The mission of The Reasonable Voice is to connect the dots between politics and finance, the need for better and more affordable education, our humanity, world peace, and of course, the arts, which we then gladly provide our listeners, the voting public, as informative food for thought to provoke their self-determination and appetite for equal opportunity. The Reasonable Voices are advocates prioritizing education, preserving our history, leading by example for a peaceful and prosperous world by evoking and embracing the creative artist and political unity as solutions to our challenges. This is The Reasonable Voice, Marcello Rolando, and my guest today is John Whitehead, a constitutional attorney who is the founder and president of the Rutherford Institute. Hello, John. How are you today?
Hey, fine. How are you doing?
Well, I'm great. You know, I'm listening to, watching like everybody else, but most of all, I get your newsletters, and it just all seems to keep unraveling here. And of course, what I'm speaking about is the Constitution and our freedoms. I know you lecture on that and write about that. As a matter of fact, your book, let's talk about that right off the bat, Government of Wolves, Emerging Police State. How timely is that?
Well, it's very timely. And in fact, the one criticism I've gotten on the book is that I should not have used the word the emerging American police state.
Yes.
So I do believe we're actually in a police state now, right? I think that with some of the things that have been breaking on the news, it's pretty clear that we've moved into an era where if you make a slight mistake, and if people want to go to Rutherford.org or read my commentaries, as you know, I write on this weekly, they can see all the instances and cases that are breaking, but it looks like that from the militarized police to people who are just filming the police now. We have a case out in Oregon where a fellow was just simply trying to film the police.
Yes.
Doing a SWAT team raid. He was, you know, roughed up, slammed down, but we're seeing that. There was a young guy in Ohio. He was standing by, and they were arresting some fellow with a group. The police walked up and asked him for his ID, and, you know, in America, you do have a legal right to be anonymous. He said, why am I showing my ID? And
yes.
He said, because we want to see it. And he said, well, I refuse. He got slapped around, his face bruised. So we're seeing more of that, and our unarmed citizens getting shot. So there is an alarm, especially among civil liberties groups out there, that something's awry.
Something is really something has changed, and I agree with you. It has been subtle in the past, but since 9/11, more and more, I think it's 9/11, the tragedy of 9/11, has been used as an excuse, and then the Boston Marathon bomb, probably. I mean, I try to understand. There are some people who are looking at 9/11 and then the Boston bombing, and of course ISIS now. The media is worse than the government in keeping these things, keeping us living in fear, so to speak. And I know Israel lives with that every day, and I'm not saying we shouldn't be aware, but I do get the feeling that these tragedies and potential threats are being used to justify the Pentagon handing out weapons that police don't need, unless, of course, we do have a terrorist attack. So where do we fall between all that?
Well, to be honest with you, there's a couple scientific studies right now that show that when people are in a state of fear, their prefrontal cortex, you know, that part of your mind that actually is rational,
yes,
makes moral decisions,
yes,
actually shuts down.
Yes, yes. Well,
so,
I can believe it.
And I hate to quote Hitler, his henchmen, but they all said fear was the one thing we used. They were upfront about it.
Exactly.
Fear, they said, gets the populace under control. We're seeing it rolled out in the media. You're absolutely correct. From government authorities, as always, there's something breaking every day now, which basically has people in a heightened state of fear. And the question is that in a heightened state of fear, are we willing to take our democracy and throw it down the drain? There have been a number of writers over the years that have written that democracies are very fragile. They don't last very long. They haven't lasted in most countries. There's upheavals,
Yes.
We go see it, but I'm afraid that if we go into lockdown, and we could, I'm warning people. I wrote the first drone law in the world here.
Uh-huh.
It's passed in Charlottesville, and other states are actually passing it right now across the country, which is a good sign, I think.
Yeah.
But the drones are going to be flying over our heads pretty soon, and when you talk about lockdowns, martial law, drones will be able to, they're remote-controlled, robotic creatures of different size with weapons, scanning devices, and all those things. We're going to see eventually in the future, we may not see it right away, but eventually you're going to see cities locked down with drones. And like I say, they're going to be equipped with every kind of weapon you can imagine. Plus, they'll be able to see through the walls of your home and the walls of your cars. The state police in Virginia have already said they're going to start using them next year to control traffic. That means they'll be flying over your head. When you go 51 miles an hour in a 50-mile-an-hour speed zone, you'll be violating the law, folks. Don't make mistakes.
Exactly. Because you don't even have to make a mistake or break the law. You can do as the fellow in Ohio and state your constitutional right and still get roughed up.
Oh, yeah. Again, if you go to Rutherford.org, I don't need cases all the time. But the thing that people have to understand is, and this is very, very key, I study it all the time. Sometimes I'm reading 3 or 4 hours a day on this material and writing the commentaries I work on. And right now I'm researching a book that will probably be out later next year.
Uh-huh.
But everything you're doing right now is being logged in. Your health records, by the way, will be uploaded. Your bank records. Every text message you do is downloaded. The NSA admits to 230 million text messages a day they upload into their computers. It's done automatically. Amazon, the folks that bring your books to you and stuff, they just built a huge computer cloud for all the intelligence agencies. They were given $20 million to do it. Where all CIA, FBI can all go on now to this cloud and collate their material. So if you're, here's the key, and we've had cases where people have contacted us, people planning to do a First Amendment protest, 10 people.
Yes.
They do text messages or Facebook posts. They get a visit the day before the rally or the so-called protest by the FBI, morning interview. We have cases where people have been arrested for Facebook posts citing rap lyrics. The FBI reads the Facebook post and arrives, and they get arrested or they get an interview, which is very intimidating.
Yeah.
Two FBI agents show up and say, we're reading your Facebook post. So what kind of government do we live in? I use the word police state. I'm not talking about local police. They're part of it, but all the other police agencies, FBI, CIA, they're all police now.
Yes.
They don't have SWAT teams.
Yes.
Department of Homeland Security. What kind of country do we live in where everything, as Orwell said, everything you do is being watched? What kind of country do we live in? Well, we don't live in the country that we lived in, let's say, when Bill Clinton was in office. You go down the list before they had all this technology.
Yes.
We live in a different country, so what do you call it?
Exactly. It's so much has changed since the Patriot Act. I mean, I get it that everyone was upset at 9/11 and worried what was going to happen. I was worried primarily because I didn't trust the administration, but still, we had been attacked, and there needed to be some response to that. But the Patriot Act, what did it even have to do with getting over there and getting Osama bin Laden? The Patriot Act was about people, it was about us, and it's still there.
The problem is, people say, how do you balance all the gifts of terrorism and stuff? How do you balance freedom? Freedom doesn't balance out very well, especially when the forces we have turn inwardly. And the Department of Homeland Security is a good example with 241,000 employees, a $61 million budget.
Yes.
Purchasing 1.6 million hollow point bullets, 1.6 million for their agents, but no explanation to be used internally. The Social Security Administration buying hollow point bullets for their agents.
Yes.
The Department of Education has SWAT teams. They're doing SWAT team raids, as I show in my book, A Government of Wolves, for overdue loans. Where have we come to?
I know.
When in the middle of the night, and often without a warrant, bang, your door slams down, and these people come into your doors, they're black, militarized gear, which, by the way, they're receiving from the Department of Homeland Security.
Yes.
That didn't used to happen in America, folks. It's a 15% increase, by the way, in SWAT team raids just over the last 15 to 20 years. There's 80,000 now occurring in the United States. There are like 2,000 in 1980.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the key. Crime is at a 40-year low, according to FBI in the country, and officers getting killed in the line of duty is at a 50-year low.
And yet, we're filling up our prisons.
We have the largest prison
population
in the world, and we shoot more people in this country and kill them, the police do, than any country in the world annually. So what's up is the question.
Exactly.
I raise these questions. I footnote everything I do. I'm not a conspiratorialist, but I sit and ponder. As I look when I grew up, when my next-door neighbor was the chief of police, who most of the time didn't carry a weapon.
Mm-hmm.
And when he arrested people, most of the times, if they had too much to drink, he took them home and dropped them off. He didn't handcuff them, throw them in jail.
Uh-huh.
He took them home and said, get in the door. If I catch you again, you are going to jail.
So how did we get from that to Ferguson? You really have hit it, John, as usual. The question is, what's happened? I mean, I know there are a number of institutions taking advantage of 9/11 and the Patriots Act and the Boston Marathon, but there seems to be, and again, I'm not one to jump at conspiracies either, but there seems to be a plan. And I try to think, even though I don't agree with it, I try to think, okay, someone is looking at something we don't know about a potential attack on America, and they want the police force to be prepared for it because the military can't suddenly be all over the country. And I go, well, yeah, the military can be all over the country because it is already. How does that jive? I mean, it sounds logical, and yet it that part of the brain that thinks rationally goes, but wait a minute. That was one of the things the Founding Fathers most feared, as I think you've mentioned in your writings as well, that a standing army is not something that's very American, not on our soil anyway.
Not one turned inward on
yes.
citizens. Now,
yes.
I mean, no rational person is going to be against defending your borders against terrorist attacks or whatever.
Yes.
But what does Culpeper, Virginia police force need an MRAP?
Exactly.
A mine-resistant armored protection vehicle for.
Exactly.
I mean, why in this community, you know, Albemarle County and the city of Charlottesville, do we have over 100 5.56 millimeter rifles, those assault rifles used in Afghanistan? Why do those things exist in communities where there are basically very little crime, small communities? You're seeing it. Some communities now have helicopters that have very small communities, SWAT team raids, all those things.
And you know,
is there a plan? Well, you know, basically the. And I've studied the problem, and I know that my book had gone with wolves. Under the Reagan administration, that's when the first handouts started handing across the country to police agencies, all the military gear. It accelerated up until, believe it, George W. Bush. It actually slowed down from under Bush. Under Barack Obama, the year 2013 was the biggest military handout of police, of militarized gear to police in the history of the United States.
Yes, I believe that.
That's the true statistics.
Yeah.
2014 could be bigger. So the question is, is there a plan? I think that just looking, and again, I'm a civil liberties lawyer. I've sued the president. I've sued Congress. I've been in and out of Washington, D.C. with lawsuits, deposition. The one thing I've noticed when I file a lawsuit against a legislation in particular or some agency that's implementing some kind of program is the money trail.
Yes.
That's the key thing that I was taught early on, follow the money trail.
Yes.
You will find that, and there are large corporate entities are making tons, and this is all verifiable, it's on our website, mm-hmm. making tons of money off of the militarized equipment. For example, an MRAP at its lowest cost, these mine-resistant armor protection vehicles are like tanks. The lowest price that the Department of Homeland Security put on them was $150,000. I've seen bigger prices. Police departments get them for $2,000.
Wow.
But at least the taxpayers are paying $150,000 per vehicle for those things.
Mm.
Probably more. We don't know. So there are a number of corporations that make this equipment. They're making tons of money. Is there a plan? Yeah. I would say it's money. Follow the money trail. What did Bob Bob Dylan say money doesn't talk, it screams?
Yes, yes.
It swears? Yes, it does.
Well, you know, this is what I've always said about war. Most of the wars that we fought historically even have not been necessary wars. I mean, I give you Revolutionary War and I guess the Civil War and World War II. But beyond that, I go, you know, but what were the others for? We can't even justify, except as
well, you have Colin Powell, you know, apologizing for going into Iraq.
Exactly.
There was no weapons of mass destruction.
No, and that
you see an issue.
Yeah, exactly. And then you realize, as I tell my friends all the time when they ask this question, I said, well, you keep hearing about the cost of a missile or a drone or bomb, and it doesn't occur to you someone is buying that, and it's us.
Ask the question.
Yeah, and who's selling it?
Why did Obama sign a legislation allowing drones to fly over America starting in January 2015 with no civil liberties protections whatsoever? Follow the money trail. I found out very quickly it's a $30 billion a year industry starting next year.
Yes. Yes.
And folks, I'm telling you, go on our website. We've researched it. These things are going to be awesome. They have Hummingbird drones. They have an Atlas IV Android now. It's 360-pound, 6-foot man, if you want to call it that.
Mm.
They're saying by 2020, after that may be the future policeman walking up to your door, remote control, and it will not be friendly. These Predator drones, all the drones you're going to see, they're going to be armed heavily.
Mm.
Tasers, lasers, sound cannons, by the way. And let me go back. Did people realize that tasers were first used overseas? They were developed there. Amnesty International came out and said they were torture devices.
Mm.
Now you've got the sound cannons that have been used in Ferguson. They were used in Pittsburgh. They were developed first over in Iraq.
Yes.
They're all coming home.
Yes.
So who's making the money? If you follow the money trail, again, I've been at this for 40 years, almost 99% of the time. I have friends that work on Capitol Hill, and they tell me the same thing.
Yes.
They say it's really dangerous, John. That one, a longtime friend, said your next book should be on how the corporations steal from it. So the people on Capitol Hill know this. It's no secret.
Yes, and I'm aware, and part of the reason they don't, I mean, they have fear as well as greed, like everyone else. And
they're good people on Capitol Hill and don't like it. They don't know what to do about
exactly.
It.
What you know, you're outnumbered by those who are already receiving financial stimulus, if you will, from the people who make money off of war. War, you know, it was discovered, frankly, with the Marshall Plan, which was such a great idea, except suddenly people who make war munitions, the things with which we make war, said, aha, here's a deal. This works. We go in, we sell to the Pentagon and to the government, and they blow up things, and then we go back in and we start our businesses and fast foods and what have you, and oil companies and gasoline stations, and we make it on both ends. Anyway.
Look, the 1961 farewell address to the nation, President Dwight Eisenhower, 5-star general.
Yes.
Gave us a warning.
Yes.
Beware of the military-industrial complex. It's a armaments industry now that's going to make money off of war. So you better get ready for it. Don't let it run amok in your land. It will do two things essentially: undermine freedoms and wreck your economy. And I talk to economists now and say that our whole economy now is balanced on war.
Yes.
If we don't, we could fold. We don't make products. I mean. When was the last time? It's very seldom when you go to the store you can buy anything made in this country.
I know, it's true. I'm going to stop on that note. Stay with us, everyone. I'm talking to the founder and president of the Rutherford Institute, John Whitehead. And follow the money is the message. And it's especially the message for the generation after John and me, because this is where we are evolving. This is where America is already got 2 feet, you know. And we'll be right back. Stay with us.
And now, another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Indie Film Minute. Some more mature folks recently joined a younger set to watch The Perks of Being a Wallflower. In the following discussion, the elders judged it a worthy film that elicited fond, sometimes painful, often humorous memories of high school years. Those more age-appropriate to the film's young cast called it not worthy, but great. rare insight into the reality of the high school experience. In fact, the best film ever on the subject. Based upon his well-regarded book of the same title, Stephen Chbosky opens with the reticence felt by most teenagers at the prospect of high school. Managing to avoid both cliché and sappiness, he creates a vibrous pit of emotion and insecurity, spiced with love and cruelty, cliques, drugs, and judgment, the familiar torturous tests that shape who we'll all become. Charlie is lucky when his first day hunt for lunchroom acceptance leads him to a pair of seniors who become his shepherds through the gauntlet. Outcasts themselves, they are wizened by years in country and have come to know the value of being different. After all, when high school is over, it's the artists, the geeks, and free thinkers who become the cool kids. The perks of being a wallflower. Not in theaters. Discovery through rental.
Welcome back to the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio Show. My guest today is John Whitehead, the founder and president of the Rutherford Institute and author of Government of Wolves, Emerging Police State. And I'm going to join the crowd that say you can strike emerging from the list. We even at the University of Virginia, they now have 12 M16s. And, of course, they say they're on a different... Now, I fired M16s. I was in the military. And I know what they can do, and I also...
Yeah, in the military as well. Yeah.
Exactly, and I know, having watched those standing beside me at the various foxholes on the range, how it affects people to fire an automatic M16. So they say the UVA police, it won't be automatic, it will only fire one bullet every time somebody pulls the trigger, for whatever comfort that gives us.
Well, here's the crazy thing. I just saw a list of universities that got MRAPs, mine-resistant armor protection vehicles.
Yes.
Ohio State and down the list have them now, plus all the armaments for their police. The question, and there are a number of older policemen, former police commissioners that say none of that's necessary. It will not stop the crazy shooters.
Yes.
It's not going to stop any of that stuff. The question is, why do they have it?
Exactly. So that, again, do we come right back to that? And that's the question, everyone, for this from this show. John Whitehead, Marcello Rolando, are asking you to consider this. This deserves attention. Why are the police being armed by the military with military offensive weapons? And it's more than Ferguson, as horrible as Ferguson was. And I do want to talk about Ferguson specifically for a bit, but remember, all of this is happening while, as they promise, well, we're doing it for your safety and security. Well, I'm feeling less safe and less secure. I don't know about the rest of you, and it's not really funny. Between NSA drones, prison populations, I don't know. I'll tell you what, John, let's throw this one out, too. The Bill of Rights. Most people don't know that the Bill of Rights are part of the Constitution. But more than that, the Bill of Rights were the first amendments that the Founding Fathers made themselves to the Constitution. And, you know, we throw out, you know, the First Amendment this, the Second Amendment, whatever. But I'm just wondering, just to play devil's advocate a bit, maybe, with the Second Amendment, if we're justifying a police, a militarized police, is my point, does that justify open carry, or does, in my opinion, open carry is kind of like expressing freedom of speech, yelling fire in a crowded theater? We used to say that that's not freedom. You know, you have freedom of speech, but you can't yell fire in a theater crowded by with people.
Unless there's a fire.
Exactly.
If there's a fire, you yell fire. Yeah, I would say I've gone now again. There's a commentary people should read at Rutherford. It's commemorating the 227th year since we have our Constitution. It's called An Unbearable and Choking Hell, the
yes.
Bill of Rights in Wake of 9/11. Yeah, looking at all the amendments, I have veterans. We've defended a lot of veterans across the country that get these knocks on the door from the FBI because they're doing Facebook posts, anti-government Facebook posts, stuff like that. Some of them are pulled out of their homes, and they don't like it. But I've had some email me and say, I have my rifle, and I have it ready if a SWAT team comes to the door. I'm ready. Yeah.
See, that's what I'm afraid of.
Yeah,
I mean,
I'm afraid for them because I email them back and say, dude, put the gun down.
Exactly.
If they come through your door, the first thing you do is lay down on the floor.
Yes.
Don't move. You'll get shot. That happens routinely.
Yes.
The 1776, as it was first conducted with armed weapons against the British Empire, there was some kind of parity. That's no longer true.
Uh-huh.
There is no such thing as an armed rebellion anymore, folks. I'm sorry. I hate to give you the bad news.
Yeah.
So if you're going to be armed, again, the Supreme Court is upheld just recently by in the Heller case that people have a right to have a gun, of
yes.
course.
Yes. Right.
Look, Obama's actually been seen holding a rifle, so
yes.
although he's expressed some anti-gun sentiment.
Yes.
If you want to go hunting, that's fine. The thing is, standing up against a police force like we have today, oh my.
It's just,
no.
it's just.
You're going to have an MRAP, flashbang grenades. They're not friendly. If you saw the case in Atlanta where the little girl got her face burned off, a little kid.
Yes.
You see that case?
I did.
Scary stuff. Americans can't have the firepower. There is no way. I mean, you're not going to have an MRAP, a mine-resistant armor protection tank. You're not going to have helicopters. You're not going to have the flak jackets, the boots, the helmets, which are all given out by the Department of Homeland Security, the local police, the assault rifles, the M16s, the 5.56 millimeters. So I'm telling people, hey, how do you do this? Well, my hero, which I often explain to people, there's actually a bus sitting in his office, Martin Luther King.
Yes.
His phrase right before he died, he was getting very radical, by the way. He had surpassed Malcolm X in terms of his enthusiasm for change. He preached militant nonviolent resistance. He said government no longer listens to us. We need First Amendment activity. That's the way to change things.
Yes.
Get together in groups. Get down to your local city council. If you don't like the fact that your city council, I mean your police, local police, have assault rifles, MRAPs, which every police department has in this country right now, your city council should look at the agenda and say, let's see, our local police department has 100 assault rifles, an MRAP. Why do we need that?
Yes, yes.
And if you don't need it, why do you have it? Let's return it, because that could be used in a very bad situation and someone could get killed. So what I'm advocating is local action. You don't need your guns, folks. Go down to the city council. Exercise your rights. The average American watches over 150 hours of screen time per month. That's cell phones, laptops, and television.
Yes.
I'm telling people, hey, take about one-third of those hours, get together with your friends, get down to your city council, and have them do their job. Not sit there and look like they're bored.
Yes, yes.
Because there's a lot of things going on they should be taking action on.
And it does have to happen at that level.
Exactly.
Because it's not
going to happen at the federal level.
Exactly.
Well, I ask this question. Edward Snowden told us a lot of things. We've now investigated his allegations. They're true.
Yes.
The NSA, all the intelligence agencies are violating all of our rights, basically. They're bypassing the Fourth Amendment. They're doing surveillance. They're not supposed to be doing that. What has Congress and the president done to protect us from that?
Not much.
Nothing. Now, a local government. Now, you have the National Defense Authorization Act, which says if the president believes you're a terrorist, which can be an extremist, and I can explain that if you want.
Yes.
They can arrive and take you away to a military detention camp. There's a town up in Maine that said, hey, the city council, the residents got down there and objected. We're not going to follow that in our community. We're not going to allow the U.S. military to come in and arrest our people. Our local police will do that if they're considered dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's a good idea. What that sends a message to the big boys up in D.C. that, hey, the people really do care. They're not sitting around, you know, watching TV all the time and stuff. They're actually active. That's how you change. That's Martin Luther King, by the way.
Yes.
That was his theory.
Yes.
It's a good theory.
It is a good theory. And I have to say that on a number of issues, but perhaps not the ones we're discussing today, but Charlottesville was, as you know, the first city to say no drones over our skies.
Yeah, I wrote the law.
Exactly, I know. And it does have to be the municipal level. It has to be city councils and mayors and city managers. People need to go. And Charlottesville is good about attending the city council and Board of Supervisors meetings. I've often gone and they've been a good representation of the people, but we're not really discussing the kinds of things. I mean, you know, we're talking about Route 29 and what's going to happen to the businesses, and that is important. We need to, as you say, if we're going to be on the screens all the time, then look into what's happening to our police force. And as you say, the big question is why. There has to be a reason for it. And of course, a lot of it is because whether they use them or not, somebody's making money. It's making the police force trigger happy.
Well, it's treating two things. I call it action reaction.
Yeah.
When people wonder why people are stockpiling weapons. I mean, I have contractors who tell me.
Uh-huh.
people are building new homes now. They're building little walls inside the home where they can put their rifles.
Oh, God.
But here's the key. They're reacting to what they're seeing the police do.
Yes.
And the agency. And they're concerned.
Yes.
Rightly so.
I agree.
So how do you ramp that down? It's like I say, I grew up in an era where the police did not. So the police I grew up in the town, I grew up near Peoria, Illinois, a big city.
Yes.
A lot of the cops didn't just decide they weren't going to carry their guns. They were running around, and they didn't walk up to people. I have older policemen, by the way, in Charlottesville and Albemarle who have approached me and said, I don't like the way the police generally approach people today, even with speeding tickets.
Yes.
They're very authoritative. But, you know, the people who wrote the Constitution, supposedly the people we pay with our taxes are our servants.
Yes.
We're the masters.
Yes.
We should be treated respectfully.
Yes.
I mean, okay, so I'm speeding. Sir, you're speeding. I have to give you a ticket.
Okay.
Uh-huh. But here's what I tell people today. I've seen it happen, even in Virginia. If you're going to argue, get ready.
It's a whole
you
different.
Get tasered. Yeah. You don't know.
Yeah.
Just be careful these days. I'm you know, I have to be a reasonable man. It's not something you do. You got to be really, really careful you're going to do it these days, folks. I'm telling you. I've got warnings from local people in this community on that. So
uh-huh.
It's going to happen everywhere eventually. And I think before you end the last time, you talk about the children, our grandchildren.
Yes.
That they're really going to see it. I have about 10, 12, 13 UVA students that study with me year round. And
yes.
When I talk to them, I say, listen, I'm seeing the tip of the iceberg right now.
Exactly.
You're going to see more of the iceberg, unfortunately. Get ready, you know, get out there and get active. Show your colors if you really believe in this stuff, because if you have grandchildren today, folks, wow.
Yes.
Get them ready. And first of all, make sure they know the Bill of Rights, because most people don't.
Most people don't. You know, I often say I wish I could. I need to bring it in sometime. I have it in the car all the time, and I forget who it's by. But I have an audio, a CD of the Constitution. And when I have questions and when I have doubts even, when some issue comes up and I want to make certain, well, what does that really say? I slip it into the CD player. You listen to it. And sometimes it's confusing, and you have to go back and listen to it two or three times, but it really is, it behooves us. We must, as citizens, know what's in the Constitution, not just always wave it and the flag and go, you know, you have to know what it is.
Yeah. You know, and I emphasize, the Bill of Rights is 462 words.
Exactly.
Prime Minister, we actually have a billfold, Bill of Rights, that you can slide in your billfold.
Uh-huh.
We had a fellow a couple years ago who was on a street corner. He was a lone protester. He said two policemen pulled up. He had our little billfold card. The policeman started questioning about what he was doing, why he was out there, and he pulled out the First Amendment. He said he started reading it to them.
Yes.
And they looked at him.
Like they don't.
He said, "Oh, here's a present for you." He handed them our Bill of Rights card. They looked at it. They said, "Okay, sir." They got in the car and drove off.
Well, that's good, because you know we used to be.
And we give those out free, by the way. If people want one, just drop by our office or go to our website, Rutherford.org, and we'd be glad to get you one.
Rutherford.org. Okay.
Yeah.
Because initially, you know, all of America was a free speech zone.
Exactly.
And now you have to stand in little roped off areas far away from the event to express your concern or disagreement with whatever's going on.
And the courts have upheld it. Well, like I say, the people who wrote our Constitution, if you read the First Amendment, America was a free speech zone. As long as you're peaceful,
yes.
You have a right to go up to your representatives, talk to them, but you can't do that today. No, you're in a free speech zone. I have colleges now that have free speech zones. When they have events, they actually put them in alleys.
Oh, my God.
So they can't. We had a case in West Virginia. We got it moved. They were putting the free speech zones in alleys where the people protesting couldn't even see the people they were protesting.
You know.
If you're protesting and the people you're protesting can't see it,
then
know you're there.
Exactly.
It makes no sense to have the protest.
And when institutions of higher education are part of this farce, that's even more disconcerting.
Dangerous.
Gee, dangerous is the word.
I speak to lawyers across the country, and I recently in this area, I spoke to about 100 lawyers in a room. I was talking about the issues I was involved in. I stopped in the middle of my speech. I says, can any lawyer in this room give me the 5 freedoms of the First Amendment? I left around the room. I said, if you raise your hand, I'll call on you.
Yeah.
One guy started to put his hand and put it down.
Yeah.
And not one person would stand up and try to rattle them off to me.
Oh, gee.
Because we don't teach them well in school now. I've had an Albemarle teacher teach civics. He says, I only have a half semester now, John. The rest of it's preparing to take tests.
I know. You know,
he was complaining to me. He says, I want to teach it. I've got your Bill of Rights thing. I pass out the kids, but I don't have time to teach it anymore. I said, you don't have time to teach the Bill of Rights.
It's been a while since I taught in classroom situation anyway, and I can remember when I was a child, as a student, that we studied civics. You knew what was going on, but by the time I was teaching, once a year for about a week, they did a kind of mock debate for the students and putting a bill in, but it was so abbreviated, it really didn't deal with the amendments, that is the rights. I had to tell, when I was teaching, and of course I'm teaching filmmaking and theater, not politics and civics, but I would say, as a script would indicate something, or I got a question from a student, I would say, you know, there's some things you have to know, whether, no matter what your class, no matter what your age, what class you're studying, no matter what your age, you know, sex or sexual preference, whatever, some things you have to know. And Shakespeare is one of them. And what the Bible really says in certain places is another. But you have to know the Bill of Rights. There are only 10 of them, and you have to know them, because if you don't, then you don't know how things are supposed to be. So when they are not, when a guy is shot dead in Ferguson, you don't, I mean, I am pleased at the reaction, but again, it's one of those Americans get so excited over an event. This was horrible. This was terrible. And, you know, a week or two later, actually, they lasted longer this time. They've forgotten. It's a short attention span.
Well, I always ask this question. In New York City, they do a lot of stop and frisk
yes.
on the streets.
Yes.
80%, of course, minorities.
Yes.
That usually tends to play out everywhere across the country.
Yes.
While 30 people watch and make no comment.
Yeah.
Okay. In Milwaukee, anal probes on men on streets.
Oh,
sometimes
God.
Causing bleeding by policemen, finding nothing, looking for drugs, while people watch. Now, why are they watching? Because they don't know really clearly what the Fourth Amendment says.
Exactly.
You're not supposed to touch a person. Do surveillance on them unless you have probable cause, which means there must be some kind of evidence or some kind of strong suspicion they're up to something illegal.
John?
They just looking the wrong way.
Yeah.
The police call it reasonable suspicion. You can be pulled over. There was a case in Texas, a year and a half ago, where two women were supposedly got the police. He said he saw them throw something out of the car. He pulls them over, calls the backup, asked if they had marijuana. They said, no, we don't have marijuana. So he says, okay, out of the car. They did vaginal and rectum searches on an aunt and her niece without changing the gloves. They sued, and they're going to win some money over that. But again, the taxpayers pay for that one.
Exactly.
But that they actually did that. I mean, because he thought they may have marijuana, the policeman thought that they may have thrown something out the window. I mean, I go back again, 20 years ago, that would have caused shockwaves across the country.
Yes, but now...
No one... Oh, yeah, it's another case.
We must go, John, but let's let people know at least 3 things. Let's slowly say your website again, please.
Yeah, the website is rutherford.org.
And the book is Government of Wolves,
Emerging American Police State. You can get it cheaper on Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
And what about from the website, we can also get the wallet size Bill of Rights?
Yeah, just click on the box and ask for it. Yeah, we also have a pamphlet called Do You Know Your Bill of Rights? It's a little more extensive. You can actually share with your children. It's like a graphic comic book.
Uh-huh.
And kids like it. I've had people call me and say, yeah, I'm teaching my kids the Bill of Rights. They love this whole thing with the cartoons.
That's great. That's great. Tell me also, I know you teach. How does one get to a class of yours? How does that happen?
Yeah, I speak around town. You just go to our website again, Google, and we also have a really good Constitution section on our website.
Yes.
Which goes through the Bill of Rights, the founding of the Constitution, and by the way, how radical the American founders were, some of them at least.
Yes, some of them. All right, John Whitehead, it has been an exceptional conversation, as it always is with you, and so happy that we have a constitutional attorney who actually knows what's in the Constitution and is out there fighting for all of us, regardless of color, age, size, sex, whatever, political persuasion. John fights for all Americans to enjoy the freedoms that were intended to be ours, given to us by our founding fathers. Thank you so much, John Whitehead, and all the best to you.
Thank you, sir.
Bye now.
Stay with us, as we'll be right back with a final comment from The Reasonable Voice.
And now, another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Indie Film Minute. Here is a gem from the past for you. 1962's Lonely or the Brave with Kirk Douglas, Walter Matthau, and Gina Rowlands. The screenplay was by Dalton Trumbo, freshly resurrected from his Hollywood 10 blacklisting. This was Douglas's project from the get-go and his own personal favorite film. Frequently appearing on top 10 westerns of all time lists, it's often labeled the first existentialist western. The opening shot completely captures its theme of rugged individualism versus the demands of modern conformity. A lone cowboy sleeps in the Southwest desert. Awakened by a jumbo jet streaking slowly across the dawn sky, he tells his horse Whiskey, "Maybe it's time we took off too." Douglas plays the traditional idealized cowboy who will break from jail and head out across the desert on horseback. He is pursued by a modern army of deputies, police cars, even a helicopter led by an empathetic Walter Matthau. Among the several future stars to watch for, Carol O'Connor as the driver of a long-distance rig hauling toilet fixtures. This will not be your typical Hollywood ending. The powerful symbolism throughout makes Lonely or the Brave an important journey for any lover of fine film. Its search for integrity remains as relevant today as when it was made. Indie Film Minute. Not in theaters. Discovery through rental.
Hello, I'm Marcello Rolando, The Reasonable Voice, thanking you for joining us in becoming one of the reasonable voices heard around the world. Ferguson, mental health, life and death. Ferguson, Missouri, in all its anger, violence, militarized police brutality, government racial imbalance, and street arms raised unity, is America in miniature. Discriminating political redistricting and prioritizing profit power over people power are co-creators of Divided We Fall. However, the diminishing of our First Amendment rights to peacefully assemble and protest didn't begin with policeman Darren Wilson shooting an unarmed Michael Brown, robbery suspect or not, multiple times. It began with Attorney General John Ashcroft's administrative decree to quarantine dissent, which then standardized designated protest areas as our new First Amendment MO. It began with President George W. Bush's political events banning and arresting those peacefully wearing anti-Bush t-shirts. It began with our Pentagon buying surplus war weaponry from those who profit from our being at war, and then giving the surplus munitions to police departments all over America. It began with DWB, FWA, SWB, and Trayvon Martin's crime, WWB. It began with Andrew Jackson slaughtering Native Americans, our Civil War never ending, 60s assassinations, a uniformed Oakland, California thug pepper spraying sitting peaceful demonstrators. It began with people being left to die in New Orleans after Katrina and Michael Brown's body left in the street for hours. The systemic stigmatizing of those deemed different is as old as the Salem and McCarthy witch hunts, as prescient as the ongoing war on women from no voting rights to institutionalizing women for sexual orgasmic enjoyment with their husbands, to states blocking the ratification of the Equal Rights Amendment. It's as new as veterans dying waiting for health care, and as old as the cataclysmic void in our treatment and understanding of Americans with mental health issues, allowing them still in the 21st century to live without help for depression like 19th century outcasts. We are not what we see on television, whether scripted sitcoms or news media. We are who we love and emulate, what we vote for and fight against, and how we treat one another. Death in all of its forms, whether Lauren Bacall and Charles Keating, or New York chokehold and Ohio Walmart shot for being black, or Anne Sexton, Seymour Hoffman, and Robin Williams. Death in all its forms cuts painfully into our 6 degrees of separation. I didn't know Robin Williams. Indeed, the closest I came to it was his co-stars, literally bumping into Nathan Lane one night after his brilliant performance in The Producers, and chanting on the set of Lincoln with Sally Field. But on so many levels, the death of Robin Williams hurts, just like losing my close friends and colleagues, J.D. Waring, Father Gilbert Harkey, and the iconic actress Mercedes McCambridge. I knew the addiction Mercedes was successfully resisting before her son, John Lawrence Fitzfield, killed himself after murdering his wife and 2 daughters. I know our stigmatizing mental illness and our ignorance of depression, schizophrenia, and Alzheimer's is as deadly as a militarized police state. I know Ferguson is an America from which we can learn life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, or continued supreme distrust of our legal system. Not all battles are civil wars between Christians and non, rich and poor, or even black and white, but increasingly, too many are. Perhaps in an election year, we and our governments and law enforcement at all levels have received a revelation. Ferguson, mental health and life and death in America. Join us. Become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world. Thank you.
Thank you for continuing to listen to, support, and share the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio with family and friends, especially online. We enjoy hearing from you, and in response, yes, we are now accepting new company and business advertisers and welcoming organizations seeking to be one of our sponsors. So please do continue to email us at thereasonablevoice@gmail.com. However, if you prefer to simply make a donation, your donations are greatly appreciated and can be made through PayPal by clicking on the donate button found at the top of the homepage of The Reasonable Voice. Website.
Thank you for joining us today to make every day as reasonable as possible. We hope you will download and share our downloadable podcasts. I am Marcello Rolando, The Reasonable Voice, hoping you will become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world.